are listening to the Drew and Jay podcast, brought to you by 21 Media Productions, and we're so professional we forgot to do the intro, Mr. Lasker.
Yeah, exactly. And after that interview of how we described as real and raw, like, we might as well be real to our listeners out there. So it is
absolutely.
It's 24 hours later. We had a chance for this episode to digest, and yeah, so we're scrounging together. Luckily, you can't see my visuals because I'm all blurred out, and so we thought we gotta at least be a little bit professional, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know that we're both jokesters in our own right, but actually, for me, like, I don't care. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was an unbelievable episode. We thought yesterday that we were being unbelievably professional, and we thought we smashed it out of the park. And then about 10 o'clock last night, Drew said, "Hey, how about we record the intro tomorrow?"
or maybe we were just so excited from that interview that, like, we just shut our laptops down and we were like, yes, we went to celebrate.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, I'm not going to ruin anything for you guys. You know, you're about to get the full experience right here after all our waffle and laughter. But at the risk of upsetting other people, I might say that that was one of my favorite interviews, because just like I put on Twitter, it was emotional. It was very raw, very balanced, you know. So if anyone's thinking, oh, you know, this is going to be super juicy, like, it isn't about that. It's not about blame. It was about feelings. It was about perspective. It was about a underrepresented women's game that I think that there's a lot of people out there that feel the same way, and feel like it should have had even more shine than it actually had. So I'm excited. I'm gonna shut up now, and I'm gonna let you enjoy episode 26, where we risk being a Lions biased podcast, but we had to go to the GM of the London Lions and Euro Cup champions, Vanya Cernicic. Let's welcome our guest into the room. Vanya, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. It only took, us winning the Euro Cup championship for me to get this spot.
Hey, well, we did have Megan on here. We had Megan on here after the trophy.
I'm just joking with you guys. I appreciate it. Honored to be here.
And that's some big shoes to fill. Megan was pretty damn good. So we always warm up our guests with a little quick fire question round. I'll ask a question. You have to give a one word only answer. And the best thing is, nobody's as bad at this game than Drew, apart from maybe Brett last week, who really struggled. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. This is the Marriott Minute. First question. The Chicago Bulls.
Unforgettable.
The Women's British Basketball League.
On the rise. Oh, that's more than one word. Sorry.
That's okay. No, we'll take it. The Euro Cup.
Wow. That's the word. Wow.
Favorite Euro Cup away venue.
Besiktas.
The London Lions.
My passion.
Coach Stella.
Determined.
Holly Winterburn.
Special.
Kylie Samuelson.
Champion.
Megan Gustafson.
Pancake. Easy.
That's a good one. Unsung hero on the team.
Ruche.
Joker of the team.
Cat.
And one word to describe yourself.
Caring.
Well, that's this week's Marriott Minute. Brett, if you're listening, you are the second best GM at the Marriott Minute. And that's a fact. Well done. That was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Much quicker on your feet, Vanya. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And You know, for our listeners out there, we thought that this is a great opportunity to bring you from behind the scenes, because we've gotten familiar with your coach, we've gotten familiar with your players, but we haven't gotten familiar with you. So this is the perfect opportunity. So first of all, it's a lot of directions we want to go here, but we must start with history in the Euro Cup, with which was an unbelievable journey for not only you guys, but for us as fans following. Just kind of take us through. It's been, you know, 5-6 days since you guys won and lifted the cup. And what are your emotions now that they've kind of things, the dust have settled a little bit?
I don't think it has settled yet for me. To be honest, I'm still processing everything, you know. And just before we started, our content team, our amazing content team, posted another video, you know, and it got me crying again. So, which tells me it hasn't settled, you know. I mean, in general, I just could not be more proud of our team and more grateful for the journey we had together. You know, it's a completely different feelings or emotions when you personally achieve a goal. I don't know, you get a job you want, and you know, you get to the school that you wanted. But then to have a group of people determined to dedicate everything, you know, for a season to achieve a common goal, to put their personal agendas aside, to put, you know, everything on the table and work for the common goal, and then actually see it all come through and all the puzzles fit together and to win at the end, achieve the goal, is just completely different feelings. It's honestly, it's indescribable.
And speaking of goals, after you guys lost the EuroLeague qualifiers, did you guys vocally say that the Euro Cup was a goal that you got, a competition that you wanted to win, or was it a feeling of let's just see how we do?
Yeah, definitely. No, so going into the season, you know, our goal was let's qualify, let's do this, let's get to the EuroLeague, you know, that was always our goal. And when that didn't happen, you know, we went from high, you know, you, as an athlete, as a team, you always believe the best. You don't go into something, you know, thinking you're not going to get it, you know. So I don't want to sound arrogant, but we thought we're in EuroLeague, you know. So then that from the high to the low, it was really hard. You know, it was hard for me. I can't even imagine for the players and for the coaching staff, you know. So it took us a while to kind of, you know, regroup and, like you said, reset our goals. And from, you know, that day on, it's like, we got to win the Euro Cup. You know, the goal that we've achieved, maybe started the season, we wanted to achieve started the season. It's been pushed back. You know, let's get it at the end of the season. And we made this whole year as, you know, into a special journey that it actually came through, I guess.
Man, love that. I mean, just to revisit, I want to jump back to last season a little bit, you know, and obviously now in the aftermath of this final, we understand just how important Coach Stella's been to you and bringing her through. But, you know, you look at the replacement of Mark Clark last year, really difficult decision for you. You know, looks calm on the outside, looks like everything's going in a certain direction. And then you go with Coach Stella. And what we tried to do here for the fans is, it's really easy for them to be, well, even us on the podcast, it's easy for us to be romantic with people. You know, I really respect Mark Clark and, you know, he's obviously created some foundations for this club to move forward. But I just want to get into the eyes and minds of you and your role. What made that timing in particular the right time to bring Coach Stella in? And what was it about Coach Stella that stood out to you to be the candidate that was going to take you forward to lifting the Euro Cup final trophy?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the question and for bringing up Mark. You know, I love Mark. He knows that. And, you know, all credit to him. We still, after, you know, what happened, like, we still have an amazing relationship. And it's because of the man he is, you know. So he understands we have the same values and we work in benefit of basketball, you know. Why it happened, because I know people were shocked by the timeline, by the decision, you know, last year. Why we or I made the decision at that time is I knew I've been in UK long enough to know that basketball landscape is different than anywhere else. You know, that any coach that comes in is going to be a little bit shocked by what's going on, you know. So I wanted the whoever the coach is, once we've decided 2 steps back, was once as a club, as an organization, we decided that the next year we want a EuroLeague team. I knew that the coach that will take the team has to be someone that had that experience, that has played at that level, that has, you know, we've been through and has seen it and will be able to envision it, you know, and will know what it takes. And I knew that's going to be really hard for a coach to come and start the season. So in my mind was, okay, the coach starting the season has to be smooth sailing, which meant you have to give him the opportunity where we did, right? Like 4 months before the end of the season, get the coach in. It ended up being Stella. Get Stella in, you know, change the rhythm, which she did a good job by losing by Caledonia.
Yeah. Right out the gate.
I did not need to go there. But the whole thing was like change the rhythm, you know, set new goals, set new standards, and prepare the coach. Basically, that was her time to get prepared and accommodated in the UK basketball. So when this season arrived, she was like, okay, I got this. I understand, you know. So that was the whole logic behind it.
I mean, that must take an incredible amount of guts from yourself to be able to pull that trigger. You knowing how Mark Clark lies within the eyes of the British basketball community. And not only that, at the time, you were on a 50-game winning streak and you had just won the cup, because this was back in January. Just let's go back to that moment. When was the exact moment that you sat down with Mark? Was it before the cup, after the cup? And what was his, I mean, was he, give us his emotions when you delivered the news?
Yeah, I mean, it was super tough. It was one of the hardest decisions, and then days when I had to deliver the news to Mark. It still is, and I think it will be. You know, it's never easy when you have to do something like that, and especially to people that you actually like and, you know, and admire and respect everything they've done for the basketball so far. So yeah, we basically sat down after the cup. I don't think he was expecting it, to be fair, but we had a long conversation, and I think by the end of the conversation he understood. He potentially did not disagree with me, but he understood my intentions. And like I said, you know, it took us potentially 2-3 weeks to kind of rebuild our relationship. And as you know, we've kept him on board because, like I said, we respect him. We see value in Mark. Mark, you know, he's an institution, British basketball. So that's why we wanted to keep him around. And we saw that he's more valuable in a different area than as a head coach. And that was my kind of conversation with him. And Lenz was with me, and like took him through our kind of logic and understanding where we see him. And luckily he accepted the role and, you know, was with us on this ride. And the win that we achieved on Wednesday is, you know, should be greatly attributed to him as well.
So just to focus on Coach Stella a bit, because, you know, she 100% deserves that. You know, just talk to us about the process that you two have gone through. Obviously you added, you know, Kramesh and Matt in the backroom staff as well. You know, Kramesh is a great friend of mine, as Drew well knows. You know, just talk to us about how special and hardworking that staff was. And it goes a lot deeper than just three names, you know, but, you know, talk to us about Coach Stella. Obviously it's been the right decision. You know, like I said, people don't understand. Sometimes you have to take the emotion out of things, and it's about making the right decisions. And I always say, putting round pegs in round holes. You know, you have to get them into the right positions. You know, what's your thoughts on Coach Stella and how she's handled this and enabled to execute your vision?
I mean, she's just been amazing. You know, like ever since we've had interviews, you know, she always came prepared. She watched our games. She would know everything. You know, I haven't met a person, or she's one of the, I don't know, five people that I can count that is so passionate about basketball, so determined, so hardworking, and just obsessed with the game. You know, she never leaves any stone unturned. Like, we sometimes had to have conversations that I had to pull her back. I'm like, Stella, relax. Like, you know. And I think that was so good for Matt and Kramesh to see that what it takes to go into the game and what preparations, you know, from what angles she looks at the teams, and not only the teams we play against, but also our teams. You can ask the players, you know, every game we would have different sets. You know, they would have to remember, forget, you know, the last game, that's a new opponent, new sets. So It's just incredible to see her growth from, you know, last season to get, you know, to start with the loss against Caledonia and to be able to pick herself up, you know, keep her head high, and now to get to the EuroCup champions is just incredible. But like you said, I don't think people ever, ever understand how much work it goes into preparing a team. And I'm just not talking about, you know, the coaching staff. It's also the performance staff. It's Jordan and Wura, you know, who need to manage 12 plus players, you know, every day. So we don't give enough credit to people in the background. Definitely not.
Yeah, and Brett did a great job of that last week of naming those background staff and coaches and videographers and everyone who attributes to the London Lions success. But you talked about those 12 players, so let's touch on this roster. And one common denominator that the British community goes to when we talk about, when they talk about the London Lions, they automatically revert to money. And one thing we've learned from our third time visiting with Brett Berman now is that it's the budget isn't as big as everyone would assume. So my question to you, of having four WNBA players on your team, you know, Megan, who led the EuroLeague in scoring last year, you know, what was your sell pitch to these women to get them to leave much bigger leagues to come to the London Lions?
Good question. You know, how we've kind of, because I worked hand in hand with Stella, I never, you know, want to bring players in if the coach doesn't like them, because I feel like, why, you know, I can just ruin someone's career. So Stella and I were really work closely together. What once we decide, let's do EuroLeague and let's bring best British players back home and give them the platform to play at home, you know, that kind of gives you a little bit of limitation as how you're going to build a roster. I don't, if you would give me free hands, I would not build a roster like this, you know. But when you say, okay, let's bring the best British roster, so this is where we went out first. Let's bring people in home, and then let's fill the missing pieces, you know, where are the kind of missing puzzles, and let's get the best people in. Like, so number one was British, best British players and best people. Those that was the two equations. Basketball came in third, if you can imagine. So, you know, Megan was someone that have rejected offers from, you know, China, Turkey, like triple offers that we could offer her, you know. But I can give credit to either me or Stella. I think it's just because she's obsessed with corgis and British culture.
Like, I want to go to London. She did know? Say that, yeah.
So I cannot take credit for that. But, you know, my pitch to the players was always, you know we're young. I'm young as a GM. I like, an organization is young, and it's so hard to be trusted in this market as, you know, as who are you guys, you know, and London, why British basketball? But like, I always told them that we're trying to be different. We're trying to, you know, Brett came from the NBA. I came from the NBA. We're really trying to create a professional setting as it's possible here. You're going to have everything to perform at your best level, but we're not going to spoil you. You know, you're going to have to go around, figure out things on your own, how to use the tube, how to, you know, manage. London is not an easy city to live. But when it comes to basketball, we're going to give you everything you need. And number two was like, we're here to change basketball landscape. We're not here to just win. We're going to ask you to be in the community, to talk to, you know, young boys and girls, to go out to clinics. You have to be passionate about this if you want to join this team. We're not just here, you know, to take cups and medals. So this was my pitch. I think Stella, being a head coach and having good relationships with them, playing with them, you know, crossing paths with them in the future also, you know, helped a lot. So it's actually pretty simple.
Love it. And just to focus on one of our young stars, you know, and we've asked a few times to a few people, you know, Holly Winterburn, take nothing away from Carly, but you wouldn't have been angry if Holly had won the finals MVP. You know, what does this do for her stock? And what's her ceiling? What can she really, you know, achieve? You know, I've seen huge growth in her this year. You know, I think it was Azania we talked to last year of what she needs to do to take it to the next level. And she was just saying she's still young. She needs to mature right across the board as a basketball player. And you know, I could really see that composure. So she's always been really competitive. But in the finals, she was really composed. you know, and able to turn that competitive nature into a real positive in, you know, making the essentially the biggest three in British basketball history. You know, what's Holly's ceiling? Where can she go from here? Because she's obviously intimated that, you know, London, if there isn't that those finances there next season, if it's not possible, then she'll be moving on.
Yeah. I mean, like I said before, Holly is just special, you know, and I, from the outside, when you only watch the games, I imagine you can't even see how special she is. Maybe that last shot, you know, now put her on a map and just realized how, you know, what do we say? Like, she has ice in her veins, you know, nothing gets to her. And she will always come through when at the biggest moments, you know. But when you watch her at practice and when you go out for a walk with her or have coffee, this is where you actually realize how special she is. You know, she's just someone that loves basketball. It's obsessed with basketball, which maybe to your surprise, not all the players have that right now in this age. You know, they just play because, I don't know, they're good at it. But Holly is good at it and loves it. She's super funny. She's super giving. She loves her teammates and will do everything for her teammates. The mental maturity from when I arrived 2 years ago to now is just, I think it's bigger than what you guys are seeing on the court. So it's hard to say where the limits are for her. I definitely see her playing in EuroLeague next year. 100% sure she's going to have a EuroLeague team. And going forward, I know it's her personal, you know, goal to get to the WNBA. And I honestly don't see why not. But this kid is just, yeah, something else.
Yeah, and I think the biggest credit that your organization deserves is transitioning her into a point guard. Because last year when I would see Holly play, especially in big games and finals, like she had a habit of forcing things, and like her poise now this year when I've watched her in big games, and like if it's not her night, she's reverted to playmaking, which is something we didn't see in her game a couple of years ago. So that's a credit to the development that's happening there. And you know, obviously it was mentioned about the finances. Jay just touched on that. And, you know, from us, we actually came on here on the podcast and talked about the timing. We felt the timing was odd. And while you guys were in the middle of the Euro Cup season, before I touch on that, I do want to say that we must give 7-7 credit, because without those finances, without 7-7, there's no organization. We don't get this moment in the first place. So we can't even go any further without saying that first. But, you know, let's just touch a little bit on like the timing of it all, and how, what I found really fascinating, Vanya, was how this group was able to come together despite knowing that this might possibly be the end of the line. Just talk us through the conversations that was had to the team to where the product that we were able to see that was a connected group, where it could easily see the other side of it, where the group goes apart and everyone does their own thing.
Yeah. So I 100% agree with you. Firstly, like, if it was not for 777, you know, this would not be happening, you know? So we have to give them credit for that. They've invested a lot of energy and resources in this team, you know, both men's and women's and the academy. So I'm super grateful for that opportunity. How it came about and the timing, it's, we have to take two steps back. So the women's market, when the women start to sign, is usually January, February, which is super weird, right? But that's where
For
the upcoming season, which is, blows your mind.
Okay, wow. Yes,
blows your mind, but that's what it is. So since December, I've been pushing the ownership. I need to know my budget. I need to know my budget. I need to know my budget. So nothing in December, nothing in January. So mid-February, they have this meeting with me and this audit, and they give me the facts. And I was just shocked, cried. And I told them, look, I have to be fair to my players. Because we have some players on a contract for next year as well. That's another issue. But everybody, you know, verbally kind of thought they will be coming back, because this was it. We're going to get to the EuroLeague, and then we're going to see what we can do or show the world what we could actually do in the EuroLeague. So even though no contract was signed, everybody was expected to come back. And now I had to deliver the news. That's not happening. You're going to have to find your job. for next season, right? So I could not have that news until now, knowing that I might be robbing them of the opportunity to find a good job in Europe. So I was like, I need to tell them. So we sat down and I cried again. And I told them, this can go two ways. It can tear us apart or it can make us even stronger. And from that meeting on, you know, I think we went through different stages emotionally from being shocked, angry, disappointed, at the end, just sad, I guess. But mentally, it just bonded us even more. Like you said, you know, we went through a lot of what Stella would say, bullshit with an S at the end through the season. But that just, I don't know, gave, I think, an extra motivation to everyone just to prove the world that we can do it, you know, that we're worth of investing, that we can win the whole thing, that we can bring people in the arena, that people are going to buy tickets, that the world will stop and pay attention. So, and that's what happened.
And I think it goes to show the character of players that yourself and Stella have brought in. So you guys deserve a lot of credit. And actually, right after that, Jay and I came on this podcast, and because I'm in two minds, right? Like, we're both businessmen and we're fans. And from a business perspective, we came on in here and said, we understand it. Like, and I even watched a clip of yours from YouTube when you first got the job, and you talked about how 777 mentioned that they want to find a sustainable model for the women's game. And so, like, if what's happening now not sustainable from a business standpoint, I understand that. And like, you had to make a decision with Mark, which was tough. You know, there's tough decisions that have to be made in business. But from a fan perspective, like, especially now that you guys have gone and won it, like, I guess the emotions that I can describe for me personally is I feel robbed, because like, I've gone on this ride with you guys and like celebrated the emotions of winning the Euro Cup. And like, I feel like not being able to move forward and continue this journey, like, I feel a little bit empty.
Yeah, I mean, I 100% understand. If you look at the numbers, you're like, okay, it's a business decision, right? But then what makes me mad or sad is like, okay, but have we used this year enough to promote, to invest in, you know, the ticket sales, the marketing? If we would have, I keep saying that, and I'm always seen as this complaining. People would split their resources, time, 50-50 between the men's and women's, or 50-50 between the marketing, you know, resources that went into pushing out the men's game versus women's game, or, you know, even our domestic games. We played at Oakland. We have even no means to bring in revenue by selling tickets because we play at Oakland, you know. So those are all little things that are just kind of like, it's not right. Like, we could have showed you, if we had the opportunity to show you, that we can actually bring fans in. Even now, we have a Euro Cup champions, and now we're playing all games at Oakland's. You know, really? You're telling me people are not going to buy tickets and come see, you know, Euro Cup champions play? So this is one negative thing I have to say to 777. You throw this money in, but you haven't thought through the business side of it, of what all the opportunities could be. Like, we have no sponsors. Like, how can we not have any sponsors, you know? So sorry, Lance, for saying that out loud, but you can see how clean our jerseys are. Everybody sees we have no sponsors.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, personally for me, especially, like, you know, I'm sure everybody felt the same, but I was so invested in the finals, you know, like, I like every single possession, you know, the tactical game plan, you know, especially coming out in the second leg. And I think, like, what makes me more sad than anything is it's been incredible. You know, as you said, like, the first things first, you were going to bring the best British players home, you know, and the impact of that is incredible. But we're going to get robbed. Like, so Drew used the word robbed. Where I think we're going to be robbed of the legacy of this Euro Cup finals, you know, because the impact isn't always seen on the lead up. It's the afterwards, you know, the legends we've created, the speech, Temi, you know, afterwards, what she was able to say and what it meant to be in London. You know, you imagine, like, using that on a nonstop reel next season as to how it feels for girls to be playing basketball. That's the thing that's frustrating, is we're not going to get to see the legacy and the impact of that Euro Cup finals. Frustrating.
Well, let me ask you this, Vanya. Is it, obviously the season's not finished yet. We still have a month left. Is it too late for a mainstream sponsor to come in and save the season? Where exactly are we with that?
I don't think it's too late. I'm still hoping on that miracle to happen. I feel like all the players have waited, did not want to have the discussions for, you know, next season until the finals, you know, have been done, have finished. So I think those conversations are being held now. So the clock is ticking for 100%. If we're talking about bringing the same team back, right? If we're talking about having a team compete in the Euros, I think FIBA will accept applications mid-May or early June. So by that's the deadline for the team to be competing in Europe. So yeah, it's not too late yet.
Well, you know, like you heard it here first on the Drew and Jay podcast. What I would say is we'd like 10% to go towards the podcast, but if you can save the Euro Cup champions, we would be much appreciated. I'm not sure how much pull we have, Vanya, but we'll try. Listen, just to kind of finish off with, you know, I talked about in the Marriott Minute and an unsung hero, and we haven't had a chance to talk about yourself, you know. Let's circle back. Let's finish this the way that we should is, you know, I'm guessing unless things change that you will need to be moving on, you know, looking at your own opportunities. You know, what does the future hold for you? And ultimately to the fans that are sharing in your frustration, that are crying right now, listening to this podcast, that are frustrated there isn't a legacy, like what's your message to them as well?
It's hard to say. For me personally, I was like a player. My mindset was like, let's finish the Euro Cup. And now basically let's finish the season before I start thinking what's going to happen next. Because like I mentioned, I still have that little bit of hope. I'm also, you know, head of the academy here, so which we started this season, and it's been going so well. So it's, you know, it's hard when you're so personally and passionately connected to the project. It's so hard to let it go. So I'm waiting to see how that's going to play out. We still don't have all the information. So if all goes down the hill, then definitely I'm going to have to look for a new opportunity. I have no idea what that's going to be, but I would definitely like to stay in basketball. For the fans, what I would love to say, you know, like you mentioned before, like this was like we won the Euro Cup and it has the potential, you know, to change the landscape, but it's with the potential right now. You know, if we don't talk about it, if the fans actually don't start coming in and, you know, buy tickets for the women's game and supporting it that way, because obviously, you know, the investors, that's what they're looking at, you know, like, are we bringing in fans? Are we bringing in revenue? So if you do, like, it doesn't have to be women's basketball, women's sport in general, just please, you know, buy a ticket and, you know, go show your support. I don't know. I'm hopeful. I've 2 years in UK. I'm convinced there's so much talent here that it's incredible. You know, we just have to start working the right way and giving the youth what they deserve. And right now the adults have been failing them. You know, everybody has been pulling, all the stakeholders are pulling their own agendas in a different way. And no one has been taking care of the sports and the kids. So hopefully that changes.
Yeah, and I would like to hope that it's not too late, because I sat in my house and I watched the NCAA Women's National Championship game on Sky Sports, something I have never seen before. And so obviously if the execs are picking up on women's basketball, you know, across seas, followed up by the domestic team winning the Euro Cup, I would like to think that that's sending some type of waves. How much, that remains to be seen. And hopefully in the next 4 weeks, something will come to fruition. But let's put on another hat, Vanya, and let's just assume that you won't be here. And because you talked about in your interview how you wrestled it. And I don't know if all fans understand this, especially those that don't follow the women's game, but you come from the Chicago Bulls, the NBA, and to leave that, a pinnacle that everybody aspired to, is a tough, tough decision that you personally talked about that you had to wrestle with. Now you've had to reflect on this 2 years, and if this is the end, was it still the right decision? And just talk about it from your lens of what you've seen, of what's changed in those 2 years.
Yeah, it's It's hard. It definitely was the right decision. I would not change anything. You know, when we look back, anything we decide, it's always, you know, the learning curve is always worth it, whatever it was. So, and yeah, we would need to do another podcast to explain, you know, what all this position has put me through and different challenges, and from learning how to say no and being comfortable saying no. And, you know, my first 2 months or 3 months here, I had to be comfortable with saying, I don't know. Like I had to give myself time to understand the landscape and not start making decisions, you know, that will later prove wrong. Like I had to know the people, what's working, what's not working. So just, you know, being saying no and I don't know when you come in and people are looking at you, what's your move? So, you know, so that was super hard. And then I think our biggest success was from people from the outside. I don't want to say hating us, but maybe jealousy is the word, because they saw us, you got the money, it's easy, you know, it's never
jealousy.
Easy. You have to work. Yeah, exactly. But from those conversations to then speed forward to our final games, we had, I think, 10 WBBL teams in the attendance. Like, how great is that? Like, that to me was the biggest win. Like, everybody in basketball community came in and supported us. And, like, even the Twitter feed. Like, I've never seen British community come in and be, like, so on point, speaking the same story and so happy for, you know, what we've accomplished. Like, so I think that was our biggest success. And then I think we've managed to implement different standards for the women's WBBL. Like the minimum standards were raised a little bit. It's going slowly, but you know, people are trying to kind of catch the train. So, and our academy, I'm most proud of what we've built with the academy. And I just hope that's the part that will keep growing and we'll be able to continue, because the kids are just doing amazing. And just shows how much talent there is, you know, in UK and what's the potential.
Well, we really appreciate your time. Like I said, I could feel every second of emotions, but you know, as we started this out, you know, we'll let you get back to some of those videos and keep reliving the, you know, 5 days and keep the tears flowing. But you know, we won't give up hope here on the pod either. You know, let's see this through to the end of the season. And, you know, hope people that are listening, like all we can do is keep the conversations alive and hopefully people make, you know, the right decision if it can be made. So we really appreciate your time and we love your honesty. That was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much
for your time.
I appreciate your time and for sharing our story. Like that's the most important thing. Like we need to share our stories. So appreciate you.
Man, REA Real. That's one of the realest, rawest interviews we've ever had, man. That was great.
Yeah, I mean, like, wow, you could feel the emotion in that conversation and, you know, just how important that conversation was. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I didn't come at it lightly, but when we started having that conversation, I thought, man, this is a really big topic. So that's what we do here on the Drew and Jay podcast.
Yeah, and I think the message is very simple. It's getting out and showing up for the women's game, because I feel like there's more chatter on social media than there actually is support in the buildings. And while I say that, shout out to the Newcastle Eagles, who had 521 in attendance last week, which is amazing. You know, I've seen that place have less than 100 people. And so for the women to be able to build their own fan base, what we've seen in Essex, what we've seen in Caledonia, it's growing. So we, and I use all of us, got to get up there and show up and not just be talking on social media what everyone else should be doing.
Amen.
Well, man, let's get right into the men's game. We got to flow right to this Plymouth thing, man, a place that you're from, you know, my wife's from, and that holds very dear to us, although the name has changed. But they go up to Glasgow to play the Caledonia Gladiators. And by the way, when I first got to Plymouth, we would take 12-hour bus journeys with no toilet to Glasgow. And now these guys have the luxury of flying without a main sponsor. And you got two guys that missed the flight. And before you jump in here, Jay, I'm going to say this. I'm not going to act like I've never missed a flight before, but I've only missed a flight because I wait to the last minute to get to the airport. And if they missed a flight at either Heathrow Airport or I forget the name of it, but the one in Amsterdam, which are two of my favorite airports, you can get lost in a sauce because I do some window shopping. I be in Gucci, Louis, looking at all that stuff, wishing. So I would just wishing. Yeah. Oh yeah. I can't afford that. Just wishing. But they're in Bristol Airport, and I flew into Bristol last year, and it ain't a lot to look at. There's no window shopping going on there. So Jay, I need you to make this make sense. If the allegations are true, how in the hell do you miss a flight when you're already at the goddamn airport?
Well, there's so many layers to this thing, you know. And look, it's just another thing in the saga of Plymouth. You know, it just is not. Let's just say how it is. It's just not being run the right way currently. You know, it just isn't being run like a British Basketball League program. It's not representing itself in terms of being competitive. Albeit, I've said it before, I look at this current roster now that they've settled down the roster and you know, I wonder why they don't have more performances in them than they do. You know, but start with the players, man. Like, we both play pro ball. You know, I played in a lot of different places in Europe. You know, you got to have pride in your job, you know what I mean? And like, you know, this isn't on holiday, mate, like wandering around and like it's at your own risk. This is like you're as a team, you know, and you're responsible. You're a professional athlete that's been given the opportunity to earn money to play basketball. Like, how many people listening to this podcast right now put their hand up and bite their hand off in an instant and replace, you know, change places with them? You know, so there's that element. Then you got to say, where is the damn team manager? Where's the team manager at? Like, who is corralling everybody and making sure, where are these people missing to? If it is, you know, that flying out of Bristol, how the hell have they gone missing? Where have they gone missing to?
Where? Because that airport.
What are they doing?
Apparently, Jay, they were eating a lovely English breakfast, and if it was. LVC, or who are the other English people on their team? If it was Dang Okoto, I would have been like, okay, but it's Americans, and it's not like it was pancakes. It was beans. It was mushrooms. It was black pudding. Like, it couldn't have been that damn good.
But who's not rallying these dudes up? Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, like... All right, you don't have a team manager. Like, okay, coaches, sorry. I know it's adding to another list of your jobs, but we are going to meet slightly earlier right by the gate. And if you're missing, we're going to come and find you.
But at what point when the team is at the gate, because everyone gets to their gate like, you know, 20, 30 minutes before you board or whatever, like, where's the point do you say, hey, where's such and such? And then, like, don't you, like, tell the people, because you won't go get them, right? Because then you might miss the flight. But don't you, like, tell the people to make an announcement on the whatever you call it, on the microphone?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we need behind the scenes footage to know exactly what's going on. But for me, if I, like, I'm that dude. I'm there 4 hours at the airport before. Like, I'm stressing.
No, I already think
I'm missing my flight 2 hours before. I'm sat at the Starbucks. I'm looking at the gate pending. It's nowhere near time, and I'm freaking out that I'm going to blink and I'm going to miss it. So I'm not missing a flight.
Well, you don't like the chase. I like the chase. My wife is traveling with me.
No,
because my wife's like you. She likes to be there 4 hours before, and I'm like, I like that adrenaline when you know, like, the clock's ticking and I love that.
I want to have my pinky out on the Starbucks. I want to have my legs crossed. I want to look at fools like you legging it through past the airport and falling over and thinking that would never be me. But, you know, I think it's just it's another saga in the story of Plymouth. Like, they've got to figure themselves out. What's going on with the pavilions? What's going on with the brand itself? You know, what's going on with the recruitment of players? Like, who are you bringing in? Don't talk to me about budget, because I'm going to give you the Cheshire Phoenix talk. You know, so unless they've got some hidden millionaire under Rachel's bed, then they're doing it on exactly the same budget as you guys. You know, they have a lack of sponsors, which I don't understand. You know, like, there's just so many things that's frustrating about Plymouth, and there's nothing worse at the moment is you've got eight teams that are competing and kicking each other's ass every week. And then you look at Manchester and Plymouth, and it just looks like they mailed that check in, you know, a while ago.
Well,
you know,
I want to be fair, because I believe Plymouth has been competitive compared to Manchester, who I stopped watching a month ago. I banned myself from watching Manchester Giants games. So Jamie Thomas, who, you know, we love to get in our text messages during games, he knows not to text me during a Manchester game because I'm not watching. But to be fair, like, Plymouth have been competitive. I will give them that. But I will say this, going back to the players, I hope they did miss for breakfast, because I would hate to see a press release where they got smart and thought, hey, let's leave the airport real quick to pop over to X, Y, and Z, because that would be even worse. And you know what I would be doing if I was PJ, or if I was the director or whatever? I would just say, you know what? Just hang tight there, guys. Don't worry. I'm going to issue a new flight. Check your emails. And the email will be a direct flight back, because Bristol does fly to the U.S. It'd be a straight flight back to the crib.
You send them all the way home, or just a quick one to New York so it's cheap?
Actually, I might send them to Iceland and say, hey, get on a boat and figure the rest of it out. But nah, man, like, you got to be more professional than that. I just hope that, I mean, one of them got sick, and Terrell Green was in the bathroom puking his guts out, and Jacob Wiley was there trying to console him and trying to look after. I hope that it was something like that.
Actually catching a grandmother rather than seeing her fall to the floor because they had their bags in their hand. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, laughable and unacceptable. But we move on. And I tweeted something out that Dan Routledge hasn't replied to. But I asked him, where does this season compare in regards to coaching ejections? Because I feel like it's been a lot. We had Studo on Sunday. We had Rob on Sky TV 2 weeks ago. We had Stella this week in the women's game. And we had Atiba Lyons 4 minutes into the game. And so, you being a former coach, what could happen in 4 minutes when the game is just, you just trying to fill each other out, to where you'd be that pissed off where you get tossed?
I think if I had to guess, and this is an educated guess, so it's not like a wild guess, I think if I had to guess, I would say that there is some past niggle in the equation. Like, so I would say that whether it's on both parts or whether Atiba's still carrying something, I would guess, because the ref was so trigger happy and wanting to get out, it's probably the ref had, you know, felt aggrieved from something before. You know, and I'm sure Atiba used some flowery language with which to make his point. You know, but I think definitely in British basketball, just the landscape of British basketball. So remember, like, we watch, you know, well, you're in the arena, but, you know, I'm watching games every single week. You know, I'm involved in the lower levels of basketball in terms of Division Threes and working with academies and all this kind of stuff. If there's one thing that I can say is, and there is no blame, I don't think, either side, is the disconnect between coaches, players, and referees is as wide as it's ever been. You know, and the reason why I don't attribute blame to anyone is that everybody's trying to do their job to the best of their ability. You cannot tell me there's a referee that walks into the building and goes, do you know what today, guys? Like, I'm going to drop the ball. Like, it's not happening. You know, I think social media is bringing a lot more increased accountability for referees, especially at the British Basketball League level. That's going to add some pressure. You know, and they're human. You know, that they're going to see these things, or other people that they know are going to be seeing these things and hearing these things. So that's counterproductive. I just think there needs to be a line drawn in the sand and a way in which we can move forward, because you don't want to see that in the game, especially when we're trying to, you know, last week we're talking with Brett about this being in a Boston airport. You know, like, are people going to take us seriously if they're seeing somebody get tossed within 4 minutes of the game? You know, your basic observer from the States that knows basketball is going to know that you know, that's a little bit silly. And I'm sure, like, if they could have their moment back again and with a cool head, they might make a different decision and just speak to Atiba. So, you know, I definitely think there's something there that just needs reforming or rejigging around so that we can bring those conversations. I think everybody wants the same thing. It's just they you know, they have a different different opinion of it, you know?
Yeah, and to be fair to the referees, I'm sat on the baseline right across from Atiba, so I can kind of see everything, but I can't hear. So his demeanor, I wouldn't have had a problem with him being tossed because he wouldn't let go. Now, obviously, verbally, if the verbiage is matching the demeanor, then, you know, enough is enough. And so I get it from that point. But I don't know.
Atiba's been in England long enough to know the flowery language as well, you know, and it slips out from time to time. Like, I've sworn in a game this year by accident and got teed up. And I've said, you know what? It is. I'm British. You know, I'm from Plymouth. You know, I drop the occasional whatever bomb.
Well, that's why, to your point, is I think this was a product of the jeopardy that we're entering. The pressure is beginning to mount. These games are getting more intense as I'm in the building. And I think it's a product of the week leading up to the game of Atiba preaching to these guys of how big this game is because they needed to win a secure fourth or have an opportunity. And also of the game plan of stopping Quad A Green, which finally someone listened to us, and they came in with a game plan, and they were clearly trying to keep him from going left and pressuring him. That's why they started Retino on him, and Retino did a great job. He was very aggressive, but he did pick up two fouls, and maybe they were warranted because you can't guard people like that, but he set the tone. I will give him that. And then they put in Prentice Nixon on him, and he didn't have the same intensity. And I could see Atiba not only frustrated with the foul count because it was 4-1, but he was upset with his players too because they allowed an open three to Patrick Whelan in the strong side corner, and he was pissed at RJ Idle Rock. And so I think it was a combination of both, being frustrated with the foul count and being frustrated with his players, and also the pressure of knowing how important this game is. But shout out to Marko Bakovic, who stepped up in a big moment because, like, in British basketball, you know, all assistants aren't equal, right? There's some assistants who are managers. There's some assistants who are assistant coaches and, like, maybe having other jobs. And so there's no full-time assistants. And so you never know, like, how involved an assistant coach is until you see them on the sidelines. And I was watching very closely, and I was looking for that player-coach interaction. And I saw right away Marko bringing in two of their players and those guys running in, listening to the message. And I was like, okay, they respect him. And so for him to go and do the job he did was amazing. But here's my thing to you, and I don't think it's just the British Basketball League. I see it in all kinds of leagues where there's a disconnect between refs and players and coaches and NBA, NFL. We see this AI thing coming to life. Could you see a scenario where we have robots reffing the games in the next 10 years?
I wasn't expecting that question. Sure. There's crazier things happening out there. And, like, you can see it with football, like the more and more decision-making that you're taking out of people. Because we're human, right? But then, like, if you're going to go in that direction, are we going to end up having robot coaches? And do you know what I mean? Like, where are we going? Where are we going?
Well, have you seen the robot Steph Curry? Shh. I like him on my team. That boy is money from half court.
Wow, yeah. And I think a few BBL teams should invest in him, but that's another conversation.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, like I said, Dan, hopefully you're listening and you can answer the question for us, but a lot of guys getting tossed, and a guy that I mentioned, Mark Stoodle. And again, you know, the pressure is mounting for the Newcastle Eagles, a team we haven't really talked about in a while. So I had to go look up their form because I was like, I feel like they're really struggling. Well, they are. Since March 10th, they're 2-6. And those wins are only against Surrey, who was coming off a back-to-back, and Leicester on Easter, who dominated them for the first 20 minutes until Leicester got really selfish. And the Eagles were able to rally. And my question to you, Jay, is, like, we talk about what's the ceiling of this Newcastle Eagles team. And I'll go first. Like, I really think that the issue with the Eagles is they got too many options. And that's why we got to give Coach Bozic his flowers, because to be able to manage a roster of that much talent is not easy. People think you just put talent together and, it's a layup. No, it's not. It's egos that must be massaged. And I kind of felt this whole season when Mark has his entire roster at hand, that it's been a struggle to balance it. And what I mean is I feel like he's being too friendly with it. This time of year, like I've said this before, like you got to roll with your horses. And when they were rolling, it was when they had that six-man rotation. And so I just feel like at this point, like he just has to find a super six and roll with it. And like if you get in foul trouble, yeah, you introduce a couple of those guys, but like their issue to me is they can't execute. They're the hardest team to guard and they're the easiest team to guard. And why they're the hardest? Because if they get in transition, live ball turnovers, they will tear you apart. But if you make them slow down and have to think a little bit and run a little bit offense and using your terminology, dig deeper into those sets, they really struggle because they don't have a plan B. It's really Jordan Johnson and Ricky McGill trying to make stuff happen, taking really difficult shots. And when they're on, my goodness, it's beautiful. And the best way that I can describe them and you can take away is this is the Eagle offense. When you see me on Sky, when I'm dolled up, got my hair cut and got my suit on, I look good. I look sexy. But when you first see me in the morning, boy, I'm ugly as hell. And so right now, that's the Newcastle Eagles in a nutshell.
Well, I think just to piggyback on a couple of things that you said is I think the problems with the Newcastle Eagles is I don't think that they've been able to get everybody bought into the roles. You know, so like you talk about the London Lions and stuff like that and like the talent that they've got and things like that. But it's about culture. It's about acceptance of roles, what you're trying to do, and those players being able to execute, you know. And I think that just has never, I think even when they were really truly, you know, remember that they didn't truly start rolling until Larry Austin went down and got injured. And that wasn't a Larry Austin problem. Like you said, Drew, is the problem was taken away. So he didn't have to fix anything anymore because the hierarchy became apparent. I don't think Taj Green has ever been able to find a comfort within this team in order to be the star. I've watched him live a couple times and things like that, and he just fades in and out, and I can just see a little bit of indecision in his head as who I am. And then, you know, I think some of those guys then get forced into not great shots, you know, and we've seen that in some of the tighter games. You tweeted out, you know, Ward Hibbert taking a really unusually forced quick three that essentially lost them that game. And I think that what they're going to have to look back on is just be like, Larry Austin is the third option of a rotation of talented guards isn't the one, you know what I mean? I still think that he was in Cheshire, I'm the man mode, you know, and the ball's mostly going through Jordan Johnson, and Ricky McGill was able to really find some comfort and rhythm with him. You know, Delpech took a really long time to settle in. Always forget what the shooter's called.
Devin Whitfield.
Yeah, you know, Whitfield's been here, there, and everywhere. Whereas what I'd really love to see is like he's got this defined role as to where he's getting his shots from. You know, and then just a little bit unfortunate with injuries. So I think when he goes back and he re-tags this, you know, because I hope this isn't the case, and I'm not saying it is. So, you know, hopefully there's no players calling me out on this. You know, but it looks like Europe's ended for them. And maybe they're just not as hungry as some of the other teams are for these playoffs and what that means. You know, maybe there's a few of them that are just, you know, I'm not saying they're not being professional. I'm sure they're doing their job, but there's a few people just thinking about home or thinking about next season. That's kind of what Newcastle looked like to me right now. You know, there's a few teams that look really dialed in, and there's a few teams at the moment that look just a little bit sloppy. And I've still yet to see in any team really that late game execution that you were talking about, Drew, you know, just tidying up in the fourth and knowing that come playoff time, maybe Cheshire, you know, in terms of the fact that they really haven't had any real lows, have they? You know, like they've really stayed consistent and really, and you know what they're going to do in the fourth. You know, they're pretty defined in what they're trying to do.
I mean, you might have a valid point, Jay, because I mentioned their record since March 10th, the date that they lost their last ENBL game in the quarterfinals, March 13th. Yeah. And so it could be, but I mean, I think the issue is, Jay, is I just think that like there's an imbalance. And I think like I criticized on the comms about the second leg. They started with Phil and they brought Larry off the bench. And I just felt like they should have, at that time, that starting lineup was rolling and clicking. And I felt like going into game two, they should have started with that. But I think now, like, I think you flip back to moving Larry off the bench because the things that he's doing now, which is hustle, transition, offensive rebound, that's something you need to be bringing off the bench. Because if you think about it, like, who's their best catch and shoot shooter? Whitfield, right? Behind him, tell me who you think their best catch and shooter is. Like Taj Green, probably, because Jordan Johnson and Ricky McGill, they shoot their threes off of the dribble.
Off the dribble, yeah.
Ricky McGill, he's better off catch and shoot than Jordan Johnson, but they like the dribble. And so, like, if you think about their starting lineup, those two guards have the ball in their hands a lot. And, like, their second option is to pass. They're looking to probe and score. And then who are you passing it to? Like, in that starting lineup, you only got Taj Green. And, like, I wouldn't say Taj Green is a catch-and-shoot guy. And so, like, I think, like, maybe you bring Whitfield back in the lineup for the playoffs. But I'll tell you this, like, I honestly think they're going to be done after the first round. Their only saving grace, and I think it's matchups, is if they match up against Leicester, they can beat Leicester in the first round because Leicester is just as Jekyll and Hyde. But if they match up against Sheffield, they're not beating Sheffield in the first round, and they're not beating Caledonia in the first round. And so those teams are too structured, too tidy for them. Whereas Leicester, we talked about it, they haven't been tidy this year. And so who they match up in the first round is going to be very, very important.
Yeah, I think so. And like you said, like who wants to be a coach in this day and age? Because like you said, those are difficult conversations. Larry Austin, you know what I mean? Like arguably, you know, frigging MVP of the league. And then this season, it's like, hey, bud, can you come off the bench? Because you bring some hustle. You know, hey, like
what did Vanya say in the interview?
Oh, yeah. And it's the same thing with Taj. You're saying Taj is not known for, but he can stick that three. Well, then, like, where's the defined role? Like, where does he get his shots from? Like, maybe he's got to expand and develop his game. And he's like, he could be thinking in his head, are you joking me? Like, I was the man in Manchester, like, throwing dunks down, like, give me the ball. So it's not easy, guys. You know what I mean? Like, I know armchair critics can sit there, but those are really difficult conversations. And, you know, you can feel that from Vanya as well. Like, we can joke, but you could feel that from Vanya that it was the right decision, the right call to make on Mark Clark. They've just won the Euro Cup championship. But she did not want to make that call. You could tell when she was talking about it, she didn't want to sit down. And it took them 2 weeks to come back to the table and be like, okay, we can be friends, you know?
And I think to bring this conversation back to a whole, when we're thinking about the Newcastle Eagles, I think as the fans, because they're really passionate, right, is you just have to take this team of what it's for, right? Like we've been talking about like them not being able to execute in a half court since October. And I just think that's what they are. Like I think when we look back at this team, we will say that, man, this is one hell of a talented individuals. But when you think about the team, because look at it, like they will get all the individual awards. Like they might have a guy or two on first team. They had four guys at the All-Star. They had a guy that went NBL MVP. They had three guys who made the Eurobasket team for Europe. And so, like, I think we would come out saying, hey, this is one hell of a talented group, but it wasn't a great team.
Can I just ask you, like, I want to follow up on the question you put on Twitter. How the hell do you win the MVP of the European League and then you're on the second team?
Well, I was told that it was the Eurobasket Awards, which I don't put very big stock in. Like, you know, they always have
that explains it then. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. They have official awards and there's Eurobasket Awards. And so we'll wait. Yeah, I think that the official awards were already announced and like no Eagles made it because it was the five guys from the final four. But
got it.
Yeah, I mean, cool. I think we'll be able to see. So if I'm a Newcastle Leeds
playoffs fans, are coming, baby.
You should be hoping for the Leicester Riders.
Playoffs are coming, baby. Anyway, that's it from me this week. Thank you as always for the support. A great episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Until then, Drew, lead us out.
Yeah, like Jay mentioned, the next time you will hear us on here, we will be getting ready for round one. And so exciting times the last couple of weeks of the season. And so let's enjoy this ride, guys. A lot of first round battles that will be very competitive. It will not be a layup for any team. And as much as we just talked about the Newcastle Eagles, I could definitely see them making it to the semifinals. And I mean, if they avoid London, I could see them making it to the O2. So it's a lot to play for, and we'll see which team will be able to get consistent and tidy up for the playoffs. But until then, guys, we'll see you for the first round here on the Drew and Jay Pod. Have a great week.